Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 36 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my wonderful, lovely, and charming hostess, Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron?
Eh? What's that? Speak up, sonny. Can't hear you. All that mumbling you're doing. Speak clearly.
Is this a retaliation for the title of last week's show?
Well, you did call me grumpy, which is fair, but then you called me old.
Now, if you noticed, the title was Grumpy Old Podcasters.
Just because you're okay with calling yourself old doesn't mean I'm okay with being called old.
Fair enough.
You know, and this after I have already assembled and mailed your Christmas present.
I'm waiting with bated breath and maybe a little fear. There might be a tiny bit of fear.
There's no fear.
Okay, no fear. Awesome.
I suppose it's a good thing that I mailed it before you called me old, because, you know, then I might have booby-trapped it with, I don't know, a Ziploc bag full of farts or something.
Can I go back in time and make sure that you know? I appreciate the craftsmanship.
Well, see, now that I know you want it, that'll cost you extra.
I met a fisherman once on a boat who said that he used to fart in Ziploc bags and put them in people's Christmas stockings. He said it worked, though. I found a video on YouTube of a lady who bought mason jars allegedly filled with flatulence. And I say allegedly because it panned out of the... No, it didn't appear to be. Unless they were clear mason jars, then maybe they're photosensitive.
Okay, that's interesting. A field of scientific study I haven't yet heard of before. The effects of sunlight on flatus degradation.
On your toots, as we say in our household.
So transitioning smoothly from toots to snoots.
Yes.
You are really big into the sinus irrigation. And I have heard, and I think just about everyone in the ACP Facebook group has heard, because someone posted it, about the woman, I think, who contracted a brain amoeba and died because she was using a neti pot.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is not the first case. I think there's been at least one other case a few years ago, because this was recent. I looked at it, I'm like, oh, is this the one? And no, this is a new case. There was a previous one where somebody else got the brain worms. So yeah. So first up, I gotta say, I mean, all my sympathy goes out to the family of this poor woman, because that's awful and terrible. But I gotta imagine some of this has got to be like one of those super duper rare, all the stars aligned just right for it to happen, because. Got to imagine the number of people using them. And neti pots are from India, where it's not necessarily well known to having the cleanest water supply. That you got to imagine you'd hear a whole lot more about such things for it to be widespread. But that being said, I use either bottled water or water that I've boiled on the stove beforehand in mine, so that I don't get the brain worms, because my wife makes me.
Now, you keep saying worms. Is this a colloquialism? Because I thought the disease was from an amoeba,
which
is not a worm.
I am quoting the Invader Zim cartoon show where he says, have you the brain worms? And just evidently it's something that happens on his alien planet.
Ah, okay. I know that Invader Zim exists, and that's pretty much the limit of my knowledge.
I'm probably going to cut that quote in.
You expect me to pay to be on this filthy machine? Have you the brain worms?
But yeah, they're amoebas. They're protists, not worms. But I like to say brain worms. Yeah. And also, I've got to imagine that I took like a month off and then went back to the Tabasco sauce. I don't do it every single day, but I've started doing it most days. And I just, that first time through, was one of those, oh, this is awful, this is awful. Oh, why did I stop doing this? I've got to imagine it's going to be something akin to the junkie sticking the needle into their arm. No, but nobody finds sticking a needle into their arm fun. But you know what? The ride is worth the little pinprick. The ride is worth the horrible, horrible burning sensation and impending panic that it oversets you as you go, I don't know if I'll ever be able to breathe ever again. And then suddenly, I've never breathed better. It's so good. Aaron, you haven't tried Tabasco, have you?
No, I have not.
Have you been keeping up with the sinus rinse, or was that just something you tried just to quiet me down?
I've mostly fallen off because we are now in the colder months and my allergies are doing a lot better. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a while for the mold to come in with all the rain.
Yep.
So I'm actually in a grace period right now, but I expect that once the mold has time to kick in and grow, I'll be back to using it. This is one of the rare times that we're using heat, because when I walked the dogs this evening at around 5 o'clock, it was around like 47 degrees and there was a fairly brisk wind. And so for Florida, that is cold. I mean, it's not unseasonably cold. Here we are in December and soon to be January, but we really only experience that cold weather for a couple of months, and it's unusual. And so now that we've got the heat on, I really expect that pretty soon the heater is going to get to me.
Yeah,
because that's just my allergies. It gets me coming and going. And honestly, no one cares. It's just an explanation as to why usually on the blooper tracks, you hear me making all sorts of really attractive nasal noises, coughing, clearing my throat, blowing my nose, that sort of thing. It's just basically I live with a permanent cold.
Yeah, that sucks. I would say, though, about the sinus thing is it might be better to keep it a little more regular, because also the whole purpose of like your nasal mucus is to catch all the yucky stuff. And so the more you're flushing that out, the better. It's kind of like hand washing. That's what I consider it. I certainly do it every time. Like when I vacuum, after I vacuum, I rinse out my sinuses. And when I come back from the gun range, I rinse out my sinuses.
Okay. So that actually reminds me of a story that I think is amusing. A couple years ago at this point, I was at the Big Three conference here in Daytona Beach, and I was there for the big finale, which is where everyone who has select fire weapons gets to go nuts. And there's a junker car that's towed out to the range, and little, I don't know if it's boxes or jars or whatever, but Tannerite, or the off-brand version thereof, is placed at various portions on the car. And when the range goes hot, everyone opens up. And when I was there and the RSO gave the command to fire, just everyone to either side of me just brap, boom. And between the amount of gunpowder in the air and someone hit a Tannerite right away, it was like, I cannot see what I'm shooting at anymore. It's all just literal fog of war. And there's a guy next to me. I don't remember what he had. It was some sort of full auto 308. He was just dumping mags left and right, and they were bouncing off my cap. And I don't know if I hit anything or not. It was fun. We all turned a lot of ammo into smoke and noise and fun. And so then I go home and I get in the shower, because not only was I at the range, but I mean, it was hot. It was sweaty. I get in there and I blow my nose in the shower because, you know, I'm dainty and delicate like that. You know, it's in the shower. You do all sorts of things. And I swear to you, when I blew my nose, it came out gray.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, oh, crap. That's quite a lot of gunpowder there.
Yeah.
And it actually took me several tries to get everything clear. And that was... It was cool and gross and remarkable and scary all at once. Like, wow, that's really cool. I really am not going to think about what I may have been breathing. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. When I was a teenager, I used to mow my grandmother's lawn for her. And the land that she was living on at the time just was really, really dusty soil. And so when it got to be into the summer months, when it was drier, and I'd be mowing. It would just be in a big cloud of dust that the mower would kick up. And yeah, when I'd get home, I'd blow my nose and it would just be dusty brown and speckled.
Ew.
Yep. Yep. And so that is one of the key reasons for sinus rinse. Just blast it all out, clean it all out. There you go. Ah, douche. It's French for clean.
Actually, I think it's French for shower.
Yeah, might be. I don't know. That was what a guy I used to work with always used to say. It's French for clean.
Weird. Do you ever get that not so fresh feeling?
Not anymore, because I stick Tabasco up my nose.
Honk.
So you were mentioning the people in the blooper reels hearing things. Again, for those who are Patreon patrons at the $4 level or higher, you get a blooper reel. And it is, not only is it mistakes that we have made and goofs that we've done on the show and just funny things that happen, but also Aaron and I, we don't always stay on topic. We stay on topic as far as you're hearing now, but that is how it went on. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at our recorder and we are 45 minutes into tonight's recording. You go look at your phone and I think you'll notice the time is not the same. So a lot of some of that stuff's just, yeah, trash. It's just us talking about how we're going to do the show or what's happening with this and what's happening with that. But sometimes we get talking about stuff and I'm not going to throw that away. That's good stuff. And, we've been doing this efficiently enough that I have decided it used to be every 4 episodes, I would cut together a blooper reel. We're now on the second cycle of at 3. I'm like, yeah, no, if we go another show, this is going to be an insurmountable task. So
yeah, for a while there, our blooper reels were climbing into really astronomical lengths. You know, it started off pretty good, about an hour, hour 10, hour 20, you know, then for a while, 90 minute things were pretty common. And then we had one blooper reel that was like 2 hours and change.
I think it was 2 hours and 10 minutes, if I remember correctly. And that's, yeah, that's, I didn't feel quite so good about that. I mean, it is what it is. I can't say, oh, I'll save some of it for later, because there's going to be more later. Right now, there are 2 files in my blooper folder. And I just looked at it the other day and I just went, I mean, there's only 2 files in there. Man, that's crazy. And then I realized, don't worry, it'll be full again by the end of the week. So yeah, there's going to be more of that, and it's absolute labor of love. Like I was actually talking with Oddball the other night, where I'm just like, oh, I got to get down and just get this blooper reel done, because we've also got a film track that I need to edit and release, and so I'm just like, I need to do it tonight. I'm tired. I kind of want to go to bed, but you know what? I'll sit down and do the blooper reel. And about 15 minutes into me sitting down and getting my nose to the grindstone, I'm like, yep, nope, this is the only thing I want to do right now.
So kind of funny that you mentioned Patreon, because, well, one of the main topics is Patreon playing games. And I don't mean happy fun time games. I mean, get the bleeper ready. I mean playing fuck games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I put some videos in the show notes. Did you watch them, Aaron?
You know what? I had every good intention of doing it, and I took a nap. Nope, I did not watch them. I mean, you told me they were really long, and I could just skim them, and I didn't even skim them. I mean, I sat down to record the podcast and went, oh, crap, I didn't watch either of those videos.
But,
oh, well.
But you did take a nap?
I did. It was glorious.
Oh, I took my daughter and I both took a nap the other day, and hilariously, I said, you know what? It's handgun. We're doing handgun radio tonight. I'm going to be up late. You know what? A nap would be good for me too, because sometimes I use that time to get stuff done or just not be a dad for just a brief period of time. Oh, the glory! And I said, no, I'm going to tuck myself into bed and take a little nap. Again, glorious. Gotta love a nap. A nap is a good thing. And then I think it's 100% of the time, if I take a nap on the day of Handgun Radio, Ryan's not feeling well and we cancel.
Aw.
I think it's hilarious at this point in time. Like, it's 100% of the time. So the story I've got, both of the videos that I've got in the show notes, and again, as Aaron said, they're long, and I haven't even watched all of them because both Sargon of Akkad and Tim Pool, both of them awesome guys. I really enjoy their YouTube channels. I'm subscribed to both of them. I find them interesting, but they're also they're some windy fellas. So I don't necessarily always finish when I start hearing the same thing being brought up again and again. Going, I think they've covered it all, and they've got other ways of saying the same thing that I've heard before. I'm good. So Sargon, he's a British fellow. I don't really know all that much about him. I really just listened to his rants, and I think he's got a way with words. And he's British, and I guess he leans right-ish. But again, when suddenly you're dealing with like political structure of another country, it never adds up the same way. I don't know if you've experienced the same thing, Aaron, of the, what do you call conservatives in your country? What do you call liberals in your country?
And well, I don't know about that, but I do know that Sargon of Akkad has been enlisted into the glorious ranks of shitlords. And he may or may not, I'm actually uncertain about this, but he might be some sort of men's rights activist.
Yes, he is a...
Or anti-feminist, or however you want to spin it.
Yeah, anti-third-gen feminist is, I think, the appropriate term that they give, because at least all the ones that I subscribe to, I'm sure there's a bunch of just obnoxious turds out there that as soon as I listen to the first 5 seconds of them talking, I'm like, cool, done. But a lot of people are the, no, you should have, you know, rights and reproductive rights, and you should vote and be able to own property and do jobs and all of that. But this more aggressive school of feminism, they draw a line at. And I'll say personally, I don't really give it a whole lot of thought, but I also don't disagree with it very much. But either way, this is not a one to say how I feel about Sargon or how I feel about what he's done and or his conduct, because that is irrelevant to this story. The story comes is... that he has been booted from Patreon. He just got up one morning, tried to log on to his Patreon account, and the account was not there, and just went, oh, what's going on? And then realized he was getting a whole bunch of emails from his subscribers and realized his account was not there. And he realized, oh, this is not the server is down. This is the, no, you've been locked out. You're done. The reason for this was, and this is the scary part, this is the part that really upsets me and why I wanted to bring it up on the show, because again, we have a Patreon group. Overall, I like the Patreon group. I've got some complaints for it, but overall, it's one of those like, it's delivering. The people that are signing up are happy, and overall, I am happy that it's all going on that way.
Well, we do have that one issue, and I don't know if it's been resolved yet, but for people who don't know, because why would you? We haven't talked about this. Weird received an email from Patreon indicating that our page had been listed as adult content. That may not mean what you think it means.
It certainly didn't what I thought it was. At first, I thought, I understand this is, you know, this podcast is clean. You just heard me bleep Aaron twice in a row, but we are clean here because iTunes and Google Play and the other podcast distribution networks, they care about if it's clean or not, and they will put a flag on stuff that's not clean, and you get more listeners if you run it clean, and that's not too hard to do. For our patron stuff, we go, you know what, uncensored. We're gonna say what we want. So the ACP Mag Dump is like this show, but not as structured and lots of potty words.
Right, because it's pay to listen. You know, there is that barrier to minors. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is fair. And I had to explain to you, because I have more experience with Patreon. I've been doing this for, I don't know, I want to say like 5 years at this point. When a page is flagged as adult, that means they regard it as some degree of pornography. Mm-hmm. And the page does not come up on a search. In other words, you actually have to have a link to the Patreon page in order to access it. And that's a problem, because if someone is just looking for us, they may not be able to subscribe. And what I think is going on is that in the same way that they came across the reference to the raffle and had a problem and flagged it and temporarily shut us down, I think.
Yes, they did.
What I'm guessing happened is that one of our blooper reels was titled Anna Heche's Butthole.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing that's tripped an algorithm. And okay, well, gee, we're talking about anuses. It must be sexual.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back and I changed the title. I censored it. I believe it was B star 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 H-O-L-E or something mm-hmm. like that. And I figured that would solve the problem. And Weird contacted them and sought. I don't know. Did you ask for them to look at us again, or?
Yeah, I went through in the terms of service. I at first thought it was the, oh, you're using potty words. It's going to be like iTunes, because I know I let a swear fly on Handgun Radio, and Ryan went, yeah, I don't think anyone's going to hear it. And the magic iTunes bots found it and put the E tag on it. And there was hell to pay at the Firearms Radio Network for one of their shows getting flagged with an E. And so he had to go back and pull that out and re-upload the show. And so I assumed it was just one of those like, oh, okay, yeah, no, this is going to be a flag that you're saying bad words. So if a kid's going on to it, then they need mommy and daddy's permission, or who knows? I don't know what I was thinking. They also like, they sent it to me at like late at night, and it was one of those like, I even looked up the California time, and it was one of those, I don't know where this came from. Either way, I realized, oh, wait. Looked at the terms of service, and yes, they are very much like anti-pornography, anti-hate speech sort of stuff, but there's not a single thing anywhere in their terms of service that says that potty words are against their terms of use. So I think they thought we were doing porny porn, and yeah. That's not the case, and I let them know that that's not the case, and they have not let me know that they're even aware that I exist since then.
Yeah, so yeah, we have some experience with Patreon playing these games, fortunately, other than hopefully to easily resolve glitches. We are satisfied with their service that they provide, but a lot of people aren't. And it's not just Sargon, apparently. Who else has been affected by this?
There's been a few other people. I actually just saw somebody else chime in. I don't have the names off the top of my head. But the key thing with Sargon was that he is a quote-unquote alt-right individual. By the way, if you hear someone say alt-right, that is someone on the left describing them as alt-right. I haven't met them, but I've heard of maybe a few countercultural people that are saying, oh yeah, no, I'm alt-right. But it's kind of like a social justice warrior. You'll never hear somebody who stands for social justice referring to themselves as a social justice warrior. That's always someone from the right talking about someone on the left. But Sargon evidently was on somebody else's YouTube channel and dropped the N-bomb on that show in a context that he defends. I'm not here to make any judgments on it whatsoever. I'm just going to leave it alone. It's irrelevant, because the key point was this was not any of his Patreon content. And that really upset me. Is that, look, I understand we're on iTunes. iTunes says, and I say that we are clean when I upload this to iTunes, and iTunes so far has been agreeable to that. Actually, I don't know. I haven't even looked on iTunes. My wife said it's fine. But if suddenly iTunes went, oh, wait, but you do an ACP bag dump that's only for paying customers and you say bad words, or you used to be on the Score Report, and that is a PG-13 podcast, so you say bad words on that one. So we're just going to flag you as explicit because you have been explicit elsewhere. That's crap. And that's what Patreon did to Sargon, is they have said, you did something naughty elsewhere, not on our platform, not in our sphere of influence, but we are aware of it, and so therefore we are going to punish you for that. That's the part that makes me upset, is that they're going through. And again, I don't know. I don't consider us to be a controversial podcast. That's some podcasts try to make their splash in the world by being controversial. I want to go the other way around. I want to go, you know what we don't see a lot of is a lot of big tent podcasts out there. I want to be the guy that says, no, come here. You're that. If you're LGBTQ, come. We've got Erin Paulette. She has, is all the LGBTQ. You know, if you are left of center, come on, we're all here. Like, if you are any sort of odd thing, if you hate the NRA, cool, come on in. If you love the NRA, come on in. I want us to be a rallying point for that. And again, we talk about knives, we talk about stuff. We're a quote unquote gun podcast that doesn't talk about guns. We'll occasionally talk about them as incidental things, but this is a Second Amendment podcast, not a firearms podcast. And I find that makes us unique in a lot of ways. And because of that, I'd like to think we're not very controversial, but at the same time, we are speaking out in favor of the Second Amendment. And there's a whole lot of people who hate the Second Amendment. And I am always somewhat concerned, especially when I see what Facebook is doing, what YouTube is doing, what Google has been doing. Oh man, I remember when you used to be able to type in a gun type and type in Google and hit Google shopping, and you would see all the prices of a gun. So you just immediately get the general idea of what the street price for that firearm is.
Yeah, these days you have to go to Bud's Gun Shop for that.
Yeah, and I don't know. Are they good or not? Google, it would be like there's like five or six gun shops that all of a sudden show up in the listing. And it was great because it's one of those like, okay, if one of them's like highballing us, I can discount that number. But yeah, just there's a whole bunch of people that have just been, not only have they been, hey, guess what? You're a super right wing militia type person talking about how to build explosives and fight the government. No, you're the bloke on the range who's a British guy living in Switzerland, as far as I know. I don't know him all that well. But yeah, he's subject to all those tyrannical gun laws, and he's just a guy that likes shooting guns, and he's shooting lots of politically correct guns and just doing it for the love of guns. And he got like booted from YouTube or screwed over by YouTube. I don't know what the full story of his page was, but I know he got screwed over hard. And I'm just like, why? He's like the least offensive gun dude on the internet. And so I'm always concerned that they might turn their sights on us. And so I don't know. I mean, I think I want to bring this up a little bit for discussion for you, the listeners, and specifically those who are Patreon patrons. Does this upset you? Are you aggravated enough that you would like us to immediately start looking for alternatives? Or I'll say right now, I've got my eyes on a few alternatives. I haven't looked too deeply into it because this is breaking news at the time of this recording. And so,
yeah, this is the first I've heard of it. So it doesn't get any fresher.
I'm keeping my eyes peeled in the event that there is that we aren't just stuck there going, well, hold on, you know, the former Patreon patrons, we'll come up with something. I'd like to be able to seamlessly transition. And maybe even if I hear about one of these other groups that are, and by the way, if you know of a group that is similar to Patreon that does allow people to upload podcasts and have different tier levels and all the things that we have here at ACP, by all means, let me know. I might even go so far as create an account at one of these places in, you know, so that we can seamlessly transition in the event that we need to. But it is a concern, and it is a concern that I think needs to have contingencies.
Well, I'm a prepper and I completely agree. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't know that there were others out there. I thought Patreon was unique, and it probably was when it first came out, but it's been several years, so I'm sure there are competitors. And I really look forward to seeing what you can come up with, what other options are out there. Because yes, absolutely, we need to have backups.
Yep, we need to have backups. And again, this is for those who are not Patreon patrons, I'm fine with that. We just supply additional content. We do like most podcasts do. Once a week, we sit down and we cut together a podcast and we don't charge anything for it. But we do some extra stuff on we cut this podcast together a little bit earlier than it gets released to the general public. And for that, people that are willing to chip in a little bit of bread to help us out, they get it early. And then on top of that, we have our blooper reels. We have our film tracks where we sit down and watch a movie and you guys get to watch a movie with us. We have our mag dump. and which is the unscripted, uncensored, really kind of more open style podcast for those who, a bunch of people said when I started the show, love it, but I like the unscripted moments a little bit better than the scripted stuff. And but people like the scripted stuff too. So we gave them the best of both worlds. And so if you like these products, they're for sale. And if Patreon decides to play games, I would like to still keep that stuff for sale. And I'd certainly like to keep giving people what they want. If you're getting something that you want and it's making you happy and you're willing to pay money for it, I, by all means, am going to continue to keep making you happy.
Yeah, we're strong believers in capitalism.
Oh, fervent believers in capitalism.
Yeah, let's talk about something happier, like sharp, pointy things.
So I have my own opinions. And I've heard Oddball mention cold steel knives in several of his segments. And so I had to ask him, what is his opinion of the company? And so here he comes. He's going to answer my questions.
Welcome to Oddball's Corner Pocket. This week, I think I'll do a request. Weird had asked me to talk about Cold Steel Knife and Tool Company and why their reputation is, shall we say, mixed in the knife community. So let's delve into this topic and see if I can avoid getting sued for anything I say. Oh, and I may or may not be drinking while making this segment. For those that don't know, Cold Steel is a brand that sells knives, swords, axes, canes, martial arts training weapons, and other similar items. I've mentioned their triad lock folding knives in previous segments. One of their big advertising points is that their knives, etc., are overbuilt and extremely strong. Since their founding in 1980, they have become one of the major players in the knife world, and I would say that any collector will know about them, if not have a couple Cold Steel items in their collection. They have a bit of a reputation for making what I would call well-made mall ninja knives. Mall Ninja knives are those knives that are so tactical that they say tactical in big bold letters on the side, have unnecessary spikes, or are painted in zombie green, and are sold for $5 in that martial arts store at the mall or in gas stations. Now, where a chunk of Cold Steel knives differ from those is that the $5 Mall Ninja knife will probably break the instant you actually use it, while Cold Steel knives are actually well made and handle a good bit of abuse. Unfortunately, they have steered clear of the awesome paint jobs. That said, if you want something purely, to steal a term from Nick Shabazz, for jackassery, Cold Steel is a great choice. You want well made folding pocket knife with a 6-inch blade? They've got at least 4 to choose from. You want a functional plastic knife so it doesn't show up on a metal detector? They've got a wide assortment, including a copy of a World War I trench knife. You want a polymer baseball bat? What size do you need? They even have a polymer cricket bat. This is the type of company that has collaborated with Stone Cold Steve Austin on knives and Steven Seagal on canes. Of course, this means that they advertise their products in a certain way. For the most part, this involves YouTube videos of them demonstrating just how heavy-duty their stuff is. This means hammering a knife into a car hood, propping a sword up on something and hanging from it, and chopping into cement blocks, pig carcasses, cowboy boots, etc. Of course, these are done by a demo team, most of which seem to know what they're doing, and some of them are a bit colorful. If you haven't watched them, I highly encourage you to go to YouTube and look them up. They can be really entertaining. Of course, then there's the head of their demo team, which also happens to be the founder and owner of the company, Lynn Thompson. I'm sure the fact that he's the owner has nothing to do with him earning that position. A bit of my own background. I've been studying martial arts in one sort or another since the 1990s. I hold ranks in a few martial arts. I'm a certified open-hand self-defense instructor. I have a few medals from tournaments, been invited to help run national and international tournaments, and trained with the types that regularly go to national and international tournaments and win. Basically, that's a long way to say that when it comes to martial arts, yeah, I have an idea of what I'm talking about. Having seen Lynn Thompson do demos in person, I'm highly suspect that he knows what he's talking about. For example, he claims that he's been studying Filipino martial arts, among others, since the 1980s. Conveniently, while I don't have that much experience, I have been studying Filipino martial arts for a few years now. I'm pretty sure that when he says, has studied, he means, I read a book. Let me be clear. I'm not saying that he's not a martial artist because he's fat. I'm not exactly slim myself, and my original instructor was best described as a super bouncy ball of death when sparring. Butterbean was a formidable boxer, regardless of the fact that he was huge. I am saying that, from what I have seen, he is a rank amateur. If he has, indeed, been studying martial arts consistently since the 80s, he should have considerably more skill than he does now. It is a fact that he and his demos are laughed at and ridiculed in martial arts circles. Of course, if it was just, oh, he's the fat lightsaber kid grown up and with lots of money, the company wouldn't be nearly as controversial as it is. There have been a couple legal issues from Cold Steel that have soured many folks as well. The most recent is a lawsuit against CRKT and their lock system. This is basically a second lock on some of their liner locks that drops in and stops the liner lock from disengaging. I believe Aaron and Weird have discussed it in a previous episode. CRKT advertised this as making their folders, quote, virtually as strong as a fixed blade. Cold Steel has long declared their Triad lock as the strongest locking mechanism out there, and decided to sue CRKT over this claim. The general thought is that they were upset that anyone might think that any other lock might be close to or stronger than theirs, even when there was no comparison made. This lawsuit has since been settled, but no one outside those companies and the lawyers know the details of that settlement. The other legal issue, which I think is more damning, is over Sanmai. As I talked about in a previous segment, Sanmai is an ancient Japanese term for laminate steel. Cold Steel has managed to register a stylized image of the term as a logo for some of their knives. They have decided that this means that they have a trademark on the term itself. This has meant that they have sent cease and desist letters to knife makers, almost all of which are small-time custom shops, who have said that they use Sanmai. Needless to say, this hasn't made them too many friends. So, in the end, I guess the question is, should you buy from them? I can't answer that. I will tell you that I own a few of their knives, including a 6-inch tri-light knife, for purely jackassery reasons. One of my favorite canes, the City Stick, is made by them, and I also believe that their plastic training knives are probably the best on the market. I will say that I won't frown on you for carrying something made by them, nor will I fault you for steering clear. Anyways, it's getting late and I'm running out of booze. If you would like to read more of my thoughts, I write at gunscarstech.com, and feel free to send questions, comments, or suggestions for future segments to oddball@gunscarstech.com, or give me a shout on the ACP Facebook group. Until next time, have a good one.
So, Aaron, do you have any Cold Steel knives?
I have Cold Steel product. I don't know if you would really call it a knife. I have one of their Kukri machetes, and I've had it for over 10 years, and I have been very, very harsh with it. I've taken care of it afterwards, but I have not babied it. It is not the blade equivalent of a Safe Queen. And in fact, I have used it in my mom's garden. Okay, this bush needs to come down. All right. This branch needs to come down. Okay. And so I've used it basically like an axe, or at least a hatchet. And I am very impressed with it. It does everything I need it to do. It was a very nice price of somewhere around $30 or so. I think you can find it for less these days. It's made of, I don't remember the number anymore. It's some type of spring steel. It's very good. I want to say 550. I don't know if that's actually what it is, but I have absolutely no complaints with it. I enthusiastically recommend it to anyone who is looking for a large fixed blade knife for prepping purposes. I have no complaints. That said, I do not fall into the cult of cold steel. I have seen those videos and they're quite entertaining. I recognize hype when I see it. And the prices they are asking for their Sanmai stuff is, in my mind, and remember, I'm cheap, I think it's patently ridiculous. I remember looking at, I think it was a Sanmai Kukri, and they wanted like around $500, I think. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, no, if I'm going to pay that much money for a knife, it's going to have to be lightsaber sharp, never need sharpening, and I don't know, please me sexually. It's just, I am not going to pay pistol money for a knife.
Mm-hmm.
No. On the other hand, I know plenty of knife snobs who, and I'm not specifically talking about Oddball, although he would probably plead guilty to this, who would be perfectly happy paying that amount of money for a knife if it was of sufficient quality.
I believe, I can't remember if he did it in his personal Facebook page or did it in the ACP page. He's listening now. Put it up in the ACP page if you hadn't. I know some people saying that they would never pay more for a knife than they would for a gun. And he's got a whole bunch of his higher end knives centered around his high point.
Yeah, you know, I would say that's actually a fair comparison. I would say that Cold Steel really tries to bill itself as some sort of uber cool knife manufacturer. I don't know, maybe Kimber, just to pull something out of my rear end. But most of the knife snobs very much regard them as high points.
Mm.
If not, were, I mean, I don't think that they say that they're actually trash, but they are ridiculously overhyped and things like that.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone say that the knives are specifically bad. I've never heard anybody give like a solid negative review on any Cold Steel product. But I've certainly seen them and going, you know what does this do better than the Columbia River or the Kershaw equivalent of this knife that is made and it's half the price?
Yes, but do you have videos of it being used to chop a tatami mat in half?
There goes my other complaint. I do not own a single Cold Steel thing, and I really almost see it as a point of proving something. It's just like when I seek the Cold Steel brand, I just go, yeah, pass. And it's not because they're bad knives. Again, I 100% agree with Oddball's statement at the end of the, no, if you carry a Cold Steel knife, cool, cool. If you don't want to carry one, that's also cool. The thing that bothers me about them is, as you said, the cult status. Lynn Thompson, he's a big guy and he is cutting all this meat and tatami mats and banging into car hoods and banging them into boards and then using them to climb them as a ladder and all these crazy things in the videos. And all that. And it would be awesome if he smiled and winked at the camera.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Everything is just super serious.
Yeah. No, man, you're building a stepladder out of folding knives. Like, no, this is jackassery. This is goofy behavior. You're cutting a hole through a car hood. You're throwing a spear at a water bottle. Like, this is all goofy behavior and totally cool if you are Matt Carriker at Demolition Ranch shooting stuff up in, you know, in his, you know, in his backyard and like winking at the camera going, yeah, no, I'm a veterinarian. Like, I own my own business. I have a wife and kids and I'm a very successful man and a very smart man, but in Demolition Ranch, I'm an idiot. I'm playing dumb.
And love, I'm going to go shoot this gun with another gun.
Exactly. Yeah, he shot a 9mm down a high points barrel. He's done stupid stuff, but he's having fun with it. And there's a wink. And he knows that he's doing it just for entertainment. That wink never shows up with Cold Steel. And then it gets doubled down with on my blog. I'll put a link up to it in the show notes. On my blog, I found Lin did a video where he was shooting guns at a range. And I even remember this was a very long time ago. But like he was doing stuff like shooting from the hip and he was bouncing rounds off the dirt in front of the target. And he was making some serious both tactical mistakes, in my opinion, and safety mistakes. And on top of that was getting horribly winded while he was doing it. And I was just like, look, this is embarrassing that he's putting these up. And at the time, like, I think the videos were on sale for like $100 or something like that. Oddball says, yeah, he's got a copy that he got for free. It was awful. It was just awful in every way. And I'm a gun blogger. I'm going to blog about gun stuff. And so I wrote up some critiques on it and just some things that I thought were weird about it. And suddenly, I don't even know where it came from. All these like freaky fanboys talking about, A, how tough and cool and not fat at all Lin Thompson was. And also like threatening me with lawsuits in the sense of the, I'm going to leave statements that there might be a lawsuit in the comment section of your blog. A lawyer was never involved in any of these whatsoever. It was just culty goofballery. And that just turned me off.
So I think maybe I can close this off by putting it in what I think is a really apt metaphor here, or I suppose it's a simile. Cold Steel reminds me of the 1990s when everything was super dark and super serious and extreme. And like with comic books, you know, everything was over the top and Rob Liefeld and speed lines and pouches, and everything is gritty and dark for the sake of being gritty and dark, because that's reality.
And we all drank Surge.
and yeah, it's we're no longer in the 90s, and we look back at that and at least those of us who are still fans of comic books and other things, we look back at the 90s and go, yeah, wow, a lot of that was really bad. It really took itself way too seriously. And a lot of things have climbed out of there. And I feel like Cold Steel hasn't. So as far as I'm concerned, great products, but their marketing needs to change, even if it's nothing more than, yeah, we're out here having a great time chopping crap up. Don't you want to do it too? You know you want to.
Yep. Though also to be fair, they are making a mint. So yeah, it's just like I say, Tom Cruise is a terrible actor. And I stand behind that. I think he's a terrible actor. I don't think he brings a lot to the table as an actor. He also makes millions of dollars for the studios. So yeah, who's right?
Yeah, it's not like Tom Cruise is crying himself to sleep every night because you think he's a horrible actor.
That's true.
No, he's laughing all the way to the bank and wiping his rear end with $100 bills.
Yeah, man, I also don't like mint chocolate chip. Guess what? Everybody else likes mint chocolate chip ice cream. I'm wrong.
You are wrong. Oh my God, you're not just wrong, but you are fractally wrong. I mean, not only are you like self-evidently wrong, but there are other lesser elements of wrongness within the greater part of wrong. So speaking of wrong, what do you do when someone from Viceland wants to talk about guns in America, but admits that he could be wrong? You get a very unusual weird audio fisk, that's what.
So the following clips you're about to hear were given to me by fan of the show, Aaron Paulette. Thanks, Aaron, for sending me these. It's a series from Viceland that talks about guns. I'll let the host speak for himself.
I'm Krishnan Devolu, and I'm willing to admit that even though I have strong opinions, I'm not always right. In this series, I'm going to talk about guns in America. I'm interested in seeing if we can talk about serious, polarizing stuff while still keeping an open mind. This is Maybe I'm Wrong.
Wow. Okay, so go to the show notes and watch these videos, because right off I'm going to say, this series is perfect. He talks about guns, and he does his very best to give a balanced view of the subject. and he admits he might be wrong. This is not a typical anti-gunner. My one complaint is while the video cite references, he just gives the sources, like the American Psychiatric Association and Everytown, but not the actual papers or pages he read to get this information. It's still better than 99% of the things I fisk for this segment. As I said, he's very balanced. Let's have a quick listen.
Maybe I'm wrong, but creating gun laws around mental health problems won't do much to prevent mass shootings. People with serious mental health problems represent less than 1% of people who commit gun-related homicides every year. That doesn't mean mass shooters weren't disturbed or suffering, but mental health is not a one-size-fits-all metric we can create gun control laws around.
I can't argue with that logic, but he does make some mistakes.
For instance, if you were to take guns away from anyone who's lost parental rights as a result of domestic abuse, it would have a far greater effect on reducing gun violence.
Of course, domestic abuse is one of those odd little cutouts in gun laws. It's called the Lautenberg Amendment, and it makes any conviction of domestic abuse as much of a prohibiting offense as a felony conviction. Personally, I'm not one to defend domestic abusers. But I do find it a bit odd that somebody could commit a violent act against their domestic partner and lose their rights to own and possess a gun, but if they do the exact same violent act to a total stranger or a non-romantic friend, no foul. Personally, I'd be much happier with the disqualifications the 1968 Gun Control Act just cover predetermined violent crime and ignore any convictions, no matter how bad, that were not violent in nature. And of course, have a robust system in place to restore the rights of the more minor violent offenders once they prove that those behaviors are behind them.
With the AR-15's prominence as the mass shooter's weapon of choice, lots of people want to ban semi-automatic weapons like it.
Another mistake. In fact, rifles of any kind are not as common as handguns in mass shootings. Looking at the mass shootings from 1982 to 2018, 27% of the shootings involved a rifle of any kind, while 55% were pistols. Rookie mistake, Krishna.
Blanket bans and prohibitions simply don't work. They don't work for drugs, they didn't work for alcohol, and from the standpoint of harm prevention, they won't work for gun violence.
Well, at least he came to that conclusion, even starting with bad data. But this isn't the Weird Agrees with People segment, so let's get to the fisking.
Maybe I'm wrong, but if guns were treated like cars, gun deaths in the United States would be reduced.
Oh, good Lord, not this crap again. If you hadn't read the Law Dog post on guns and cars, go hit the show notes and do that now. Treating guns like cars would be just a total hodgepodge. And never mind that he's falling into the anti-gun trap of talking about gun death as if anybody cares about that metric. Yes, people getting shot is a concern. But when talking about overall policy, people are concerned about public safety overall. So being concerned about people getting shot while ignoring all other violent crimes that don't involve guns, or how such policies affect overall violent crime rates, is totally disingenuous.
Cars defined post-war America, and then they became a legitimate public safety concern with increasing fatal car crashes in the 1960s. But smart regulators didn't ban cars, they mandated a simple, effective safety feature, the seatbelt.
Interesting point, and we can argue if it's valid or not. But we're talking about guns, not cars. So what do you suggest we complete this analogy with? What is the seatbelt for guns, we should add?
However, the Consumer Protection Safety Act of 1976 specifically excluded firearms from most safety testing requirements.
That's his solution? Consumer protection testing?
Why? I believe lawmakers then feared any regulation would not withstand court challenges under the Second Amendment.
No, because guns, when functioning properly, are dangerous. Everything from an Olympic target pistol to a 50 caliber Barrett are deadly if you shoot somebody. The Consumer Product Safety Commission cannot regulate the firearms industry. And we also have the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which makes it illegal to sue a gun maker for a gun used in the commission of a crime. This doesn't mean that firearms makers are exempt from consumer safety standards. Far from it. Firearms makers are on the hook for any damages or injuries caused by a firearm that is properly used and maintained. This is a basis for that joke that all new Ruger firearms come with a return shipping label. No, this is not me saying that Ruger makes bad guns. I would argue quite the opposite. And as far as I know, nobody has been injured by a defective Ruger firearm that is under recall. Just the industry doesn't want to take a chance that a gun might malfunction. That kind of wrecks the argument, doesn't it?
Even if the Second Amendment carves out special protection for bearing arms, the First Amendment protects free assembly, which I interpret as the unfettered ability to travel to meet people.
I don't disagree. Once we disband the TSA, I think we can talk.
Cars are immensely important tools, and so are guns. And regulating car safety hasn't yet infringed on our ability to get around.
But again, what safety are you proposing? You don't disprove that guns themselves are remarkably safe, especially when compared with cars. The vast majority of auto fatalities are accidental death, so much that we call them car accidents by default. Yet accidental gun deaths are so small they can be approximated as zero, and the vast majority of gun deaths are either suicide or homicide. So more people get killed on accident by cars than on purpose by guns. Further, Christian doesn't offer any device analogous to the seatbelt that would make guns safer. So while it's a good sentiment, it's a hollow one. Okay, there's one last segment left.
Maybe I'm wrong, but guns are not the best way to keep your family safe.
Oh, this one. Do I sense a Kellerman study reference? Okay, he doesn't reference Arthur Kellerman directly, though he might be referencing a source that cites him.
65% of male gun owners list protection as a top reason for ownership. And the NRA names household protection as a reason why people should take up arms.
This is gun culture 2.0. Gone are the days when the number one reason for owning guns is hunting and recreation. And I say good riddance. Not that I'm against sporting use of arms. Far from it. But when a piece of sporting equipment is under attack for causing 30,000 deaths a year, it is much harder to defend keeping it around. Meanwhile, if the same item is in fact a tool for personal protection, well, Krishna doesn't seem to have a problem with people owning cars. And cars killed 37,000 people last year.
But that urge to protect often backfires. One analysis shows that private citizens use guns to harm themselves or others far more often than to kill in self-defense.
This is twisting the data, because it fails to account for the number of guns that harm no one. My guns have neither hurt a member of my family, nor have they killed an attacker. So me as a gun owner simply isn't counted in these numbers. And I must note that the vast majority of family members harmed by guns are suicides. Again, accidental gun deaths are minuscule, and I have gone to great lengths to disprove the anti-gun claim that guns cause suicide. Check my FISC in episode 29 if you need more information.
So if a man wants to prove his manhood by defending his castle with a gun, it's his family that might pay the price.
If you're buying a gun to defend your manhood, just don't. This is a total logical fallacy. I own a gun for the same reason why I own fire extinguishers. I don't expect to use either one of them in a life or death event. But if I am ever caught in a house fire or a violent encounter, I will be really happy to have the option to use the right tool for the job. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them. I'd like to thank listener and fan of the show, Erin Paulette, for sending me those videos.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's so awesome. I don't know if you've ever met her, but she is so cool.
So, those videos are interesting. On the one hand, he does admit the possibility that he's wrong, but he seems to progress from the opinion that he's right. And he doesn't really entertain much of the possibility that he's wrong, other than saying he could be wrong.
Well, that's one of the downsides. There's two big downsides to these videos. Number one, there's no others of them. As far as the recording of this, I guess I haven't checked in like the last hour, but there are no new, I might be wrong on guns or on anything. They're all just talking about guns. So that's the only ones that are on this, on the YouTube channel that I've seen. If there's anywhere else, please let me know. But the two is they're also super duper duper short. And I mean, I get it. Like, I try to get our segments down to, you know, under 10 minutes. So yeah, we're quick format, but even that, these ones are like a couple of minutes long, and it's one of those, how much can you delve into a subject matter in that amount of time?
Well, unfortunately, that is the nature of the medium right now. You want people to watch it, but if it's too long, they won't. And apparently that sweet spot is, I don't know, 2 and 5 minutes. Remember, blogs fell out of favor mainly because people didn't have the attention span to read them. And so they started watching videos, which instead of actively reading, you just passively listen. And now, and I'm guilty of this, I will see a video. Okay, that looks interesting. How long is it? 20 minutes? No. Of course, it's different for me, you see, because I am a fast reader. And usually the rate at which these people talk is slower than I read. And so I'm going, just get on with it already. And so I would rather read because I can read faster. Whereas a 20-minute thing, it's like, or, all right, I'll just sit in the background and go, you know, do the dishes or whatever while I wait for them to get to the important parts. Mm-hmm. But in general, well, I think like 90% of society, if not more, is pandering to the lowest common denominator. And so we are living in a low attention span soundbite generation.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. So instead of one video that is exhaustive and 30 minutes long, he will do five videos that are about 2 minutes long.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to crunch them all together into one big audio file, chop it up into little segments, and then do a fisk on it.
It's like what the Scottish say about the haggis. It all ends up the same in your stomach.
And it was already in a stomach. And it's delicious. This week in Gun Lovers and Other Strangers, David's going to start a series on carry. This week he starts with the most common method, belt carry, and the permutations therein.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. In this segment, I'd like to discuss on-body handgun carry options. As we're entering the winter months, I'll also be calling attention to carrying under cold weather clothing. Now, of course, method of carry is very personal. Most of us who've carried a handgun for any length of time will have a box or drawer full of holsters that, for whatever reason, didn't make the cut. When using a belt, there are two main methods of on-body carry. They're referred to as inside the waistband, IWB, and outside the waistband, OWB. Following this, there are four main positions of waistband carry. They are appendix, to the left or right of your belly button, hip, also called 3 o'clock, or 9 o'clock if you're left-handed like me, behind the hip, and small of the back, also called SOB. All of these methods and positions have different pros and cons, and I'll address each in turn. Since I have to start somewhere, I'll discuss carry methods first. Inside the waistband positions the holster closer to your body, making it easier to conceal and potentially improving retention. However, without the proper type of holster, this carry method makes reholstering more difficult as the pressure of the belt against your body tends to collapse holsters made of soft materials. In addition, you'll need to take into account the space the holster occupies when buying pants. Outside the waistband is more versatile with different body types and handgun choices. This method also allows for the most variety in holster selection. However, since the holster is held away from the body, it tends to be more challenging to conceal. If you live in a state where open carry is legal and socially accepted, outside the waistband may be a simpler and more comfortable method of carry day to day. As for the different carry positions, appendix has become quite popular in recent years. Appendix is almost always utilized as an inside the waistband carry method. This carry position is very build dependent. At this point in my life, I have a little too much weight up front to find appendix carry comfortable. I've also been informed by smaller statured women that when bending forward, a handgun carried in the appendix position can poke them in the ribs, or possibly a little higher. Several trainers I've spoken to dislike appendix carry due to the muzzle being pointed near the groin, while other trainers prefer appendix carry for ease of retention and the increased speed of drawing the handgun. Carrying on the hip, the 3 or 9 o'clock position, either inside or outside the waistband, is still a very popular carry method. This carry position is primarily utilized by men, as women tend to have wider hips, and this carry position is often less comfortable and more difficult to conceal for women. When the holster is positioned slightly further around the belt, we get behind the hip, also called kidney carry. This carry position can utilize either inside or outside the waistband holsters and has most of the benefits of hip carry with few of the detriments. Some of the additional concerns for this position are that you have to bring your arm further back to draw your firearm, and this can be awkward. Depending on flexibility issues, this carry position may be difficult for some people as well. Female shooters have informed me of another issue with this carry position. When carried inside the waistband, the bottom of the holster can cause discomfort to their, well, bottom. Small of the back, or SOB, is another carry method that almost always utilizes outside the waistband. This position is generally a horizontally positioned holster with the grip of the pistol pointed up. To draw, you invert your hand while reaching behind your back. This method is almost entirely independent of build, but has a greater flexibility limit than behind the hip carry. In addition, if you're sitting down, such as in a car, or if you get knocked onto your back, this carry position can become almost inaccessible. These different carry positions also all have their own challenges when wearing winter clothing. Appendix, as long as your winter jacket isn't zipped up, is minimally affected in regards to accessibility. However, the bulk of the coat itself can interfere with getting a hold of your handgun. Hip carry allows for the use of winter coats that have a side zipper specifically designed for handgun access. If you don't have or plan to get one of these jackets, the standard sweep or lift draw method is only slightly complicated. Behind the hip can also benefit from the winter jacket with side zips, but is slightly more awkward. Lift and sweep are affected similarly to hip carry. Small of the back. If the jacket isn't too long, isn't changed much, but with a longer coat can be a considerable challenge. In conclusion, you need to find the carry method that works best for you year-round. This may lead you to choose different options depending on your climate and clothing requirements. In a future segment, I'll discuss some of the holster choices that are available, as well as some additional carry methods and positions. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
What did you think of this, Aaron? Because I'll tell you right now, I hate belts. Belts are the devil. They're uncomfortable. I don't enjoy them. And so all of my carry methods do not involve belts. And that was one of the reasons why I discovered my different carry methods was, all right, well, how can I lug a gun around and not use a belt?
Oh, I just thought you did it because you have this man crush on Magnum PI and you wanted to emulate him in every way possible, including a shoulder holster.
Actually, I don't know. Oh, no, he does do. Yeah, does this in all the Vietnam ones. He's got the shoulder holster. I forgot about that. In Hawaii, he's usually just tuck it in the back of his pants.
He doesn't use a proper holster. Aww.
No, not in his PI. He's in Hawaii. I think carry was probably illegal back then.
I thought it was possible if you were a PI.
Maybe. I don't know. Though I will have to say, all those like 80s and 90s cop movies and cop shows where the cops are all lounging around in the squad room or going around with their shoulder holsters. Yeah, no, that's definitely ground a deep groove in me of the, oh yeah, no, the times when I'm just wandering around my house without my cover garment on with a shoulder holster, I'm like, yeah, walk in front of the mirror. Oh yeah. Look at you.
I actually don't mind belts, so I really don't have a problem. In fact, the carry system that I have can be either inside the waistband or outside the waistband. And what I usually end up doing, because Florida, is I will just put the belt and therefore the holster right up against my skin and then pull up either my sweatpants or my shorts that have the stretch waistband and just whoop, do it that way. It's efficient. It's not really attractive, but it works.
Well, it's concealed, so it doesn't have to be attractive.
Exactly.
I own a Galco belly band. It turned out that's one of my ones in the box of holsters. That's one of those, this just didn't work out. Really, really cool holster system. I really dig on it. Like, I did dig on it especially more because this one's got, it's got two holster pockets on it. And so like, oh man, I could carry like a J-frame and my PM45 in this thing and reloads for both of them. It's just cool, but it's not the most comfortable thing in the world. It's not the most practical thing in the world, though I love it. Doesn't require a belt, and I can wear it like, yeah, with baggy shorts over it. That was when the few times that I did wear it was, yeah, I got a pair of baggy shorts that like, yeah, you put something in the pocket on it. Yeah. You're going to be seeing my underpants.
So is a belly band forgiving of the belly?
I would say yes. It's kind of like an ace bandage type material, the Galco one at least. And I actually wore mine down low so that it was actually down under the waistband of my shorts. So it's kind of like how people wear the Thunderwear holsters.
Thunderwear.
Thunderwear. Yeah.
I'm I'm not mocking the product. I'm just giggling at the name.
Yeah, it's a good name. It's a good name. I've heard it's a good product too. There are knockoffs to it. That if it is not Thunderwear, then I'm not endorsing it. But I've heard good things about Thunderwear. But yeah, Thunderwear is essentially a... It's almost kind of like a little fanny pack as far as I'm aware. I haven't really looked at one in person. I know some people who have them. But essentially, you wear it around your waist, essentially over your underwear. And so it's over your underwear, but under your pants or shorts. And that allows you for very, very deep concealment. And that was what I did with that. So that essentially, so the butt of my gun was riding just above the waistband of my shorts. And so then my t-shirt was sitting over it. But the problem with that is that you're wearing it, it's kind of stretchy and tight and all that, and it's over my underwear. So if I got to go use the bathroom, that is problematic. And being able to use the bathroom easily without drama is one of the key things to a good holster system.
Yep. I really want to like appendix carry, but as David pointed out, it is not very forgiving for most body types. I mean, if you are incredibly fit, if you're a model with washboard abs, yeah, you'll be fine. But if you're the least bit out of shape, or if you're petite, you're probably going to have problems.
Though, did you miss the Lucky Gunner video? I'll put it in the show notes of appendix carry for big guys.
I have never seen it before.
Well, it will be in the show notes, and I'll send it to you too while I'm editing the show. But yeah, there's a dude. He's a big old lumberjack of a man, and he appendix carries, and he's got a few tips and tricks to how to make it work if you got a little bit of a gut going on.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, I really like that segment because it gets all the information in one place. And within recent memory, I was called upon by someone to provide advice to a friend of theirs who is both transgender and just starting to carry, and she was looking for advice. And so I basically had to tell her over text more or less what David said, and I wish I had the ability to just, here, listen, that'll answer all your questions.
You will shortly. So thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibrspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of our podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump. You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
So, hey, last week I actually wrote a post for Blue Collar Prepping. Ooh. That's really cool. I know it's been a while, but you can go to bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com to read my article there on foot wraps, also known as portyanki in Russian, as well as all of the other great articles by the various Blue Collar Prepping writers. I'm also very remiss in writing on my nerd blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com. This is really due to a combination of the holidays are really busy, and I'm doing all sorts of repair work on Christmas lights and blah, blah, blah. But hey, I'm working on a short story, and so if you're a member of my patron group, you've been reading that and enjoying it. And of course, I have my two charities, Pink Pistols and Operation Blazing Sword, and you can find that at blazingsword.org and pinkpistols.org.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
He carries in a shoulder holster. I carry at 3 o'clock. Our carry styles are assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.